Carl Young. I'm with the AmTrust Group. I'm the moderator for the State Council. And a couple of announcements, as usual, front here, next to the back, if there's any kind of an emergency. All sessions are non-smoking. And since you've been to so many other sessions, we'll just leave it at that. I'd like to introduce you to Jay Roman from the Encouraging Safety Organization. Jay is the president and founder of Encouraging Safety Organization, a company dedicated to individuals and organizations who want to be better. His experience in safety industry ranges from overseeing safety operations of several organizations to traveling internationally, conducting workshops, seminars on safety, and OSHA guidelines. Jay is passionate about helping organizations succeed in their quest towards achieving a culture of safety within your own organization. Jay is the author of the Hands-On Self-Assessment Workbook, Encouraging a Culture of Safety, Volume 1, Developing and Encouraging and Empowering Leadership. I introduce you to Jay.
This is when you applaud.
Yes.
Good morning.
Morning.
We are a small group, but we are mighty. So let me try that one more time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you excited to be here?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Are you excited to be here?
Yes.
Well, you should be. If I can be here, you can be here as well. Now, let me give you a little bit of disclaimer before I start. I've had some medical problems within the last 8 months. Last May, I had a stroke. And so this is my first time back at a conference speaking since that time. So once in a while, if you hear my language kind of get messed up, or I slow down, or whatever it might be, don't worry, I'm not drunk. But I want you to understand what's going on with me, because I used to be good. I mean, I used to be a powerful speaker. Nowadays, I find that's very hard for me to talk. So I'm back into trying to get my stamina up and my voice. And I'm so thankful to be here today. Frankly, to be honest with you, it's going to be almost any place nowadays. With a show of hands, I want to find out how many of you are managers? Okay? How many of you are supervisors? How many of you have a non-supervisory position? Which means some of you are here to learn how to do things and not get caught and disciplined, right? That was a joke. You were supposed to laugh. Here's what I want you to understand. This is the name of the program: Eliminating the Disciplinary Process for Success. I'm going to teach you today how to get the message across to people without punishing people. Let me tell you something. I'll never forget this for as long as I live. I was in my early 20s. I had a position. I was a team leader for a company. And my responsibility was to supervise a group of people. And I'm a joke. I like to have fun. I like to enjoy myself. I can be loud and boisterous. I like the center of attention on me. I guess that's what makes it so good for me to have a position like this. But I'll never forget, one day I walk into this area where these group of people are working that I supervise, and about a half hour before that, a maintenance person had been in the area while I was gone to lunch. And they had changed a tube light bulb, and they had left all their stuff there. So when I came in, there was a ladder leaning up against a partition, and there were some tools sitting there. And I'm sitting there, and I'm talking with the group of people that I'm supervising. I look at the stuff, I go, you know, it is so hard to find good help nowadays. I mean, look, they just leave their stuff all around. Half an hour later, I I found myself sitting in my manager's office, and I was being written out. Because the person that I had been talking about, even though I was joking, had heard what I had said from somebody else, you know, those third-party type of things. Well, he said this, you know, and who knows whether they got it right or not. But he took offense to it. And he went to my manager, and he complained. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in my boss's office as he was writing me up. And he said, Jay, you've got to be careful what you say nowadays, because somebody will take it wrong. And I tell you what, I was being disciplined. I was going through the disciplinary process. Now, if you've ever been through a disciplinary process, it's like you're being treated like a kid. How many of you like being treated like kids? Come on, don't you like being treated like kids? Would you like to go to Disneyland and be a kid and you know, have everything done for you, your thinking thought for you? We don't like that, do we? Because we are adults. So, I have a simple exercise I want you to do. I want everybody to stand up. I know, you say, I need to, I have to do this. Well, that's okay. Stand up. Because here's what I want you to do. For all of you that are in a management or supervisory position, or want to be someday, or have always just wanted to do this, but never had the chance, here's your opportunity. I want you to meet my, who used to be my role model. Baby. And I practiced with this too, and I knew what I was doing.
There we go.
Here's my role model. Donald, or used to be my role model. Donald Trump. And what is it that Donald Trump says? I'm sorry, what does he say?
You're fired.
Look, I want you to give it some heart. On the count of three, I want you to do your best Donald Trump interpretation. One, two, three.
You're fired.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that. I want everybody, look at Park. Look at Park. Find somebody to look at. And I want you to get your finger in the air, and I want you to point it at that person. And on the count of three, I want you to tell them exactly what it is you need.
Okay.
One, two, three.
You're
fired. You know, maybe I should have had you practice before you did this. Here's what I want you to do. How many of you are parents? Okay? How many of you have daughters? Let's pretend like you have a daughter, and there's this, they're going out with somebody that you don't approve of. Or let's say you have a son, and all she wants is take advantage of him, okay? And they come in, and you look at them, and you don't want them dating your child. What are you going to tell them? On the count of three, using Donald Trump's words, one, two, three.
Right.
Probably take him out back and shoot him, too, don't you? Go ahead, sit down. I want to talk about assessing employee behavior. And here's a couple of things I want to tell you. First of all, there's no handouts. It's amazing. This is the first time I've really been to a conference where there have been a whole lot of handouts. If you have a business card and have not given one to me yet, then I'm going to put it in the, there's a container outside the table. Either give me the card or put it out there, because I'm going to send you the handout to the slide program, okay? Not only this, or not only that, but I'm also going to send you the electronic copy of the new book that I'm writing, and because of my health problems, that's been delayed a little bit, but probably for the next couple of months, I will also send you the electronic copy of my book called The Resolutionary Process that I'm talking about today. Okay? So, and if you don't have something to put your name and email address on, take take one of my business cards that's either laying out on the table or up front or whatever, and email me and I'll send you a copy. Okay? I want to talk about assessing employee behavior, because employees act a certain way for a reason. We have three types of employees that we deal with. The first type of employee that we deal with is what we call a can-do employee. Now, a can-do employee is that they have the training, they have the skills, they have the support to be able to do the job. A can-do employee is dependable. I mean, you know that they're going to show up to work when they're supposed to and do what it is that they're supposed to do. That's just the type of person that they are. They may have it in their background, or you taught them that, but whatever it is, they're dependable. They have a good attitude. How many of you know employees that do not have a good attitude? Okay? It's like they walk into the area and they suck all the life out of you. And they suck the life out of everybody around them. I mean, they got a poor attitude. The sun could be shining, and they look outside, and they think, you know, it could rain. They look for all the bad in everything. But the can-do employee has a good attitude. I mean, they really mess people up. They come in, and they bounce off the walls, and they're excited. They're glad to be there. They're willing to work. A can-do employee doesn't just sit around. They don't wait for other people to do stuff or tell them what to do. They don't sit in the truck and eat a sandwich or hide in the back room where they can't be found. They want to work. That's where they get their satisfaction, inter-satisfaction. And they're willing to work and they want to work. They're also productive. Matter of fact, a can-do employee will generally get up to 10 times more done than any other type of employee. They have this confidence about them in order to get done. And they are honest and they have integrity. They don't leave and have somebody else check them out at the end of the day. They don't lie to you. They accept responsibility for what it is that they do. And they also accept responsibilities for their failures. All of us wish we had can-do employees. Unfortunately, there are different other types of employees that are not can-do employees. The next one is what we call a can't-do employee. Now, a can't-do employee, for a number of reasons. Maybe they don't know how to do the job. They don't have the experience or the skills or the support in order to be able to do the job. They just don't know how. Could be they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Nobody's given them direction. Maybe they think they are doing the job. A lot of times, this can be our fault as well. Those of you that are in a supervisory type of position, what are your employees doing while you're sitting here? You see, for too many years, and this is why we have a lot of the problems that we have in the workforce today, is we have adopted the buffalo syndrome. Have you ever watched a Western and you watch these buffalo hunters and they're hunting buffalo? And you see them, they're up there laying at the top of a hill, and they're shooting at the buffalo. Now, let me tell you something. If I was hunting buffalo, I would not be laying on a hill, okay? Because those suckers would probably run me over and squash me. But they're up there, they're laying on the hill, and they're just shooting the buffalo. And the buffalo are just standing around being shot. Here's why. The buffalo hunters learned the secret to hunting buffalo. They learned that if they could find the head buffalo, and they shot the head buffalo first, All the other buffalo would stand around and wait for the head buffalo to do something. But he's laying over there dead. So they're just milling around and going, where's my lead buffalo? Boy, that's a lot of noise. So my question to you is, a lot of times, especially now while you're here, what are your buffalo back at work doing? Are they milling around going, moo, where's my leader? Moo, where's my supervisor? There's nobody to supervise them. There's nobody to tell them what to do. And so they don't do anything. Do any of you have employees like that? That's our fault. That's our fault because we have taught our employees to act a certain way. And what we have got to do is we have got to get out of the trend of treating them like buffalo. And we have got to get back into treating them like geese. You ever seen geese flying through the sky? And they're flying in a V formation. And they got the head goose up there, the head goose is flying, and they got all the other geese behind that head goose, and they're honking at him. You know what they're saying is they're honking at him?
Honk, honk.
Ooh, what was that? What's that? Honk, honk. Do that again. No. They're honking at him, encouraging him. And when the head goose gets tired, the head goose drops back and somebody else takes the lead. Our job as a manager or supervisor or team member or co-worker is to use our strengths to help people around us exceed and excel at what it is that they do. To help them. As a supervisor or manager, our job is to help people succeed. Now let me tell you something. If you are not a manager or supervisor, you're a co-worker on the front line, your job really as well should be to help other people around you succeed at their job. To succeed at safety, because that's what safety is all about. It's making sure that you go home safe and the people around you go home safe. Now, you might be the safest person out there on the floor. That's not going to necessarily protect you. You have to use a like defensive driving, okay? Except it's defensive working. You have to make sure that other people are safe as well in order to protect you. And so when you have a can't-do employee, it's not always their fault that they can't do the job. Here's the good news. The majority of your can't-do employees can become can-do employees by providing them the correct training that they need to have, by giving them the support that they need to have. If you as a co-worker are a can-do employee, and you have a co-worker that is a can't-do employee, you have a responsibility as well. Mentor them. Coach them. Take them under your wing. Don't show them the shortcuts that's going to get everybody in trouble or get somebody hurt. But help your fellow co-workers to be able to become can-do employees. If we had more people taking responsibility for each other by building a community, by building a what I call a culture of safety, where everybody is looking out for each other, and they're a part of a team, then everybody will go home safe at night. And then finally, we have a third type of employee. We have what we call a won't-do employee. Now, a won't-do employee has skills, they have the training, they have the support, they just won't do the job. How many of you know won't do employees? Okay? I mean, they have excuses. I mean, tons of excuses. They don't have any time. They're not paid enough. They could be dishonest. Too much time on their hands. I've been listening to some stories in reference to the automobile industry from some people that have been here. And it just, it's boggled my mind that some of these car companies have stayed in business for as long as they have. You see, the problem with a lot of big businesses is they are no longer in the business of providing a service or a product. They are in the business of providing benefits. Nobody else is doing the job. They're too smart to do the job. They're bored. They don't like it. Union rules. It's not my job. They're too dumb to do it. Whatever the excuse is, they'll use it. But I'm going to tell you something that most of your won't-do employees are smart enough to do the job. They have the skills, the background. They have the support. They just choose not to do it. They look for a hole in the system in order that allows the system to do the job for them or get somebody else to do the job. Now, here's the good thing. When we talk about eliminating the disciplinary process for safety, your can-do employee seldom needs to worry about this. Your can't-do employee will benefit greatly from it. And 50% of your won't-do employees will benefit. But there are some of your won't-do employees that no matter what it is that you do, won't do the job anyway. I'm going to talk about them as well. Let's take a look at some root causes. What causes these types of employees? Attitude. You can generally talk to somebody for just a minute and understand what their attitude is. They can, you know, you have to talk to them for a minute, 30 seconds, and you can generally tell what their attitude is by the language that they use, whether it's a positive language or a negative language. But a lot of your employees, your won't-do employees, have a bad attitude, and you can generally pick that up rather quickly. Maybe they have a poor attitude because of their personal background. They have a low self-esteem. Do you understand that an individual's self-esteem affects how well they do the job? Now, I come from the janitorial industry. I worked as an operations manager for a contract janitorial company. And in the contract janitorial company, we have an annual turnover rate of about 80%, which means on a yearly basis, within a year's time, we turn over 80% of our workforce. That's because it's usually a low-paying job. And look, let's face it. Some of you don't even like to go home and clean your own toilets. Now you're expected to clean somebody else's toilet. They have a low self-esteem. They don't feel good about themselves. And so with a low self-esteem, what we came to find out was that if we spent more time building somebody's self-esteem, making them feel good about themselves, we found them to be more productive. We found them to be safer, and we found that we retained them longer. With a particular company that I was working with, I was with them for 4 years, with a couple of processes that we had put in place, I had reduced that turnover rate from 80% to 30% within a 4-year period. So we need to make sure that when we have a won't-do employee or a can't-do employee, that we are also understanding where their level of self-esteem is at. And we need to build on that self-esteem. Maybe they have previous experience. Maybe they have dealt with another supervisor or another coworker that mistreated them, that didn't do the right things with them. And so they come work for you, and they say, well, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, this boss is as bad as the last boss I had. Or this company is just as bad as the last company that I was. Poor feedback. When we have an employee that, for example, doesn't wear their personal protective equipment, doesn't wear their gloves, and we see them not wearing their gloves, but we don't say anything to them, and then a couple of days later when they get hurt, we say, you know, well, if you didn't wear your gloves a couple of days ago, that never would happen. Our feedback, and actually, I don't want you to use feedback anymore. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. But we need to confront people. Whether you're in a supervisory position or not, it doesn't matter. If you are a coworker and you're working with a coworker that isn't wearing their equipment, say something to them. Because the danger to them is just as dangerous as the danger would be to you. Nature of the work. In the janitorial industry, nobody wanted to be in the janitorial industry. There are some people that are in jobs that they really don't want to be in. They're depressing. And because of the nature of the work, they have this attitude about what's going on. Job satisfaction. Do your employees or your co-workers really enjoy the job that they're doing? Do they get satisfaction from it? There's a couple types of satisfaction. There's what we call the external satisfaction. The external satisfaction is the money that we give them. Or it's the recognition that we give them. Or it's the pat on the back that we give them. You know, for an employee that likes that external recognition, you don't need to give them a big reward. You don't need to give them more money. What you simply have to do, what's your first name?
Nino.
Say that again.
Nino.
Nino? Nino, thanks for wearing your gloves. I appreciate that. Now, you don't want to do this. Hey, Nino, thanks. Because I didn't care. Did you really think I cared, Nino, when I said that? Absolutely. So let me give you a little hint. Little tip here. You really want to recognize an employee, and it's not going to take a whole lot of time, and it's not going to take a whole lot of money. You walk up to your employee, you pat him on the back, you don't have to shake their head. You know, thanks for wearing your gloves, I really appreciate that. You look them in the eye, and then you can move on. You know what you did to that man? What you did was you created that internal thing within them, which is the second way that you reward employees, by that internal feeling that they get. But you know what else you did? You showed everybody else that you are recognizing somebody for something that they're doing right, rather than always recognizing for somebody who's doing something wrong. You see, when we spend all our time trying to catch somebody doing something wrong, what do you think you're going to catch them doing? Doing something wrong. We find what we look for. I use this example a lot. You have an employee and they're sawing on a piece of wood, maybe, and they don't wear their protective gloves, and they're going, boy, I should wear my gloves, but I sure hope I don't get caught. Man, I really should wear my gloves, but I hope I don't get caught. Man, I should wear my gloves. They spent so much time focusing on what not to get caught, that that's when accidents happen. Now, if you want to change your culture, here's what you do. You start catching people doing stuff right, and very quickly, sincerely, recognize them. And if you will do that, And you've got to mean it. You don't have to go, oh, great job, Nino. Thank you for wearing your gloves. No. You've got to be sincere. You've got to mean it. Don't take it overboard. But simply, when you find an employee doing something right, take a moment to recognize them and thank them before you move on. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You're going to change the culture. People will spend more time doing stuff right, trying to get caught doing something right. Try it. Matter of fact, here's a goal for you. When you get back to work, I'll let you start next week. Come up with a goal of how many people next week that you will catch doing something right. Just a goal. Doesn't have to be a big goal. Set a goal every week for how many people you're going to catch doing something right. And I tell you what, within 30 days, you're going to see a change in attitude. Here's what it comes down to. We are all used people. We are all used people. Each and every one of us in this room are used people. Let me prove it to you. How many of you have worked someplace else and were mistreated by somebody else? Here's what happens. Here's what happens with an employee that maybe you're having difficulty with. They're a used person. Which means that when they work someplace, they were mistreated or abused in some way, and that was burned in their mind. And now they work for you. And when they come to you, whenever they have something that happens to them, here's what's going to happen. See, our brain up here is a huge database. Everything we've heard, seen, or felt is stored up here. And most of the time, what's up here it can't distinguish between what's real and what's not real. None of you can distinguish. Your brain up here cannot distinguish what's real and not real. Let me prove that to you. How many of you have been to a movie? Saw a movie, been to a movie. Maybe it's a sad movie, you know. Somebody died, or there was a breakup, and you're sitting there and you're watching that movie, and or maybe it's your favorite football team and they're losing, and you kind of get that choke up here, and a tear comes down, and why are you crying? It's not real. It's a movie. But you see, the mind cannot tell what's real and what's not real, because here's what happens. You have an experience, and your brain goes up here and says, what types of experiences similar to this have I had, and how did I react? And so your brain rushes back here. It says, oh, sad experience, I cried. And it comes out and it says, cry. And you cry. We are used people because we look at experiences that we've had in the past. And whether we react in the right way or the wrong way, doesn't matter. Our perception is this is the experience. It is similar to an experience we've had in the past. This is how we should react. And so we react that way. We are all used people. If you will understand that, if you will understand that an employee that you supervise, or a co-worker, or a neighbor has had some type of experience, and they look at those experiences through their experiences and their rose-colored glasses, and they act a certain way, then what we have got to learn to do is we have got to learn to try to change that perception. We're used people. So what's the impact of supervision? Is there an impact between a good supervision a good supervisor and a poor supervisor. They say that the number one reason that an employee leaves their job is because of their supervisor or their manager. If you're in a supervisory or a management type position, how you treat people has a lot of effect upon them. Ineffective supervisors generally tend to over-supervise people. They generally force people, they over-manage them. And they're always looking over their shoulder. And they're telling them exactly what to do, and when to do it, and how to do it. And when they tell you to jump, they want you to say, how high? An ineffective supervisor may also under-supervise. I may under-supervise. And the reason that they under-supervise could be for a lot of reasons. Number one, maybe as a supervisor, they were never taught correctly how to supervise people. That team leader position I told you about at the very beginning. One day the manager above me came up to me. He said, Jay, we're having some problems with this employee over here, and you need to terminate her. Now, I never terminated anybody before. I didn't like to terminate people. I liked people. Of course, my manager didn't like to fire people either, so that's why he gave me the job. Sometimes when people supervise, they under-supervise because they want to be your friend. As a co-worker, you know why we don't walk up to people and say, hey, you know, you should be wearing your goggles. Why don't you put them on? You know why we don't do that? Because we're afraid what they're going to think of us. We're afraid of rejection. We're afraid that they won't be our friend anymore. We're afraid we're going to be ostracized. That's why as a co-worker has more power than a supervisor does. They really do. Because if a co-worker came up to a fellow co-worker and said, you need to be wearing your personal protective equipment, it's not like management telling them what they need to do. It's because that co-worker cares about you. But a lot of supervisors under-supervise because they still want to be your friend. They don't want to be the hard person. Then we have the effective supervisor. The effective supervisor understands the WIIFM. How many of you listened to that radio station today when you came in? How many of you listened to WIIFM? Oh, come on. It's a satellite radio station. I mean, everybody gets it. Did you listen to it? Yes, you did. WIIFM stands for What's in It for Me. I'm going to tell you something. Nobody does anything unless there's something in it for them. Nobody. You are here at this conference this week because there's something in it for you. Now you got to come to sunny Florida. It's kind of like a mini vacation for you. Some of you wanted to learn something. Some of you wanted to network with people. Maybe your boss said, we got these budget dollars, we need to spend it. If we don't spend it, we lose it. You better go to this thing. Of course, in that case, you probably won't be sitting in any of the rooms this week. We all do something because there's something in it for us. How many of you, sir, what's your Rick? Is it Rick? Rick, do you hold doors open for ladies? Good. Why? Oh, I know why. You why do you hold the door open for me?
It's not good manners. Good manners.
Good manners. Okay. Now, have you ever not held the door open for me? Now, you were maybe in a hurry. You see, there's something in it for him to hold the door open. That inner self-satisfaction. That internal feeling of doing what he feels is the right thing to do. But when he doesn't hold the door open for thee, it's because there's something in it for him not to hold it open. Get to a meeting on time. Or get to the bathroom. Or get to lunch. Everything that we do because there's something in it for us. And if there's nothing in it for us, we won't do it. Your employees, your co-workers are the same way. Some of them come to work and they are safe on the job because there's something in it for them. They're safe on the job because they want to go home safe at night. They're safe on the job because maybe there's a bonus involved. If you will understand that people around you are safe because there's something in it for them, and then, as a co-worker or as a supervisor or manager, find out what's in it for them to be safe, then half the battle has been won. Strengths and weaknesses. An effective supervisor will understand the strengths and the weaknesses of the individuals that work around them. They will find those individuals that have certain strengths that will compensate for the weaknesses of other people. A good supervisor, an effective supervisor, knows how to do that. Doing things differently is as simple as changing our language. If we will change our language, there are two things that will happen. People around us will hear something different, which will change their attitude. And when we hear different language that we're speaking, we will think differently. First of all, disciplinary process equals discipline. Disciplinary process or discipline is punishment inflicted by way of correction and training. When you hear the word discipline, how many of you automatically hear punishment? That's the way we've been brought up. You know, when I was a young child, and I was going to be disciplined, this is the picture that came to my mind. I would be in my parents' bedroom, I'd be bent over the bed, and my dad would either have his belt, or my mom would have made me go out to the willow tree and get my own switch. There were some days that I would wear two or three pairs of shorts because I knew it was going to be particularly bad that day. Now, when you tell an employee that you're going to put them through a disciplinary process, what picture comes in their head? Absolutely. It would be like my standing up here and saying, now, I want you not to think about a big pink elephant. Don't think about a big pink elephant. Because I can pretty much imagine all of you start thinking about a pink elephant. Kids are the same way. When we tell them, don't run, what do? They run. You know why? Because we put the picture in their head of them running. What we need to do is change the language, and we need to say, walk. because now we have put a picture in their head of walking. Punishment inflicted by way of correction and training or pain. An instrument of punishment, especially a whip or a scourge, used in practice of self-mortification as an instrument of chastisement in certain religious communities to punish or penalize in order to train, control, correct, and chastise. We can't help it. When we hear the word discipline or disciplinary process, those are the automatic things that come in our mind. So let me ask you something. Why are we still using that language? Why? It doesn't work. How many times have we told the employee, I'm going to put you through a disciplinary process, and all of a sudden they shut down. They get this attitude. They get this chip on their shoulder. Remember when I told you that my manager brought me to his office and put me through a disciplinary process because of something that I had said? I can't remember to this day what he told me. You know why? Because I was pissed off. I was mad. I tell you what, when I left there that day and I got in my car, it was like road rage. Don't get in my way. I was actually crying. Nothing had ever happened to me like that before. And to be humiliated in that way. I went from being a 20-year-old to being a 10-year-old in a matter of seconds. So here's what I want us to do. I want us to change our language. I want us to change the language to resolution, or what I have coined a resolutionary process. Now, when you hear the word resolution, what do you think of? Resolving an issue. Coming to a solution. A resolution process is the act of resolving or determining upon an action or a course of action, method, or procedure. A solution, accommodation, or settling of a problem or a controversy. A resolutionary process. Now let me tell you something. When I was a manager or a supervisor, and I had to put people through a disciplinary process, you know what I was thinking most of the time? How much do I have to do this before I can finally get rid of it? How much documentation do I finally need to get rid of this trouble? What are those things that I need to do before that person is finally gone? I'm getting tired of disciplining. I'm just following the steps now so I can get rid of them. That's the picture that word brought. However, what I learned when I developed the resolutionary process, what I've learned is that now I change the picture in people's heads. Not only the pictures of the employee that's going through the process, but of the manager and supervisor that is conducting the process. It's a resolutionary process. What is it that we can do together, that we can work on together in order to solve this issue, in order to come to a solution, in order for a resolution to happen? It changes the attitude of both the employee going through the process and the supervisor and manager that is conducting the process. If we learn how to change the language, we will start to change the picture. And when we start to change the picture, we will start to change the outcome. But we've got to step up and start that process. The process is all about coaching. if we learn how to coach people through this process, what will happen is that we will feel good about what it is that we have to do. And the employee going through the process will feel good about the process that they're going through. So, how do we coach? First of all, it's all about asking questions. Here's the problem. We've been telling people for too long how to do something or what they need to do. For example, what's your first name?
Christy.
Christy, once again, is not wearing her personal protective equipment. She's not wearing her gloves. Christy, I told you time and time again, you need to be wearing your gloves. But you don't seem to want to wear them. I don't know what your problem is. I tell you what, Christy, you better start wearing your gloves or you're out of here. Now, did you feel good about that?
No.
Neither. But what we use this process to say, Christy, I see you're not wearing your gloves. You know that you're supposed to be wearing your gloves, don't you?
Yes.
Let me ask you something, Christy. Do you think I tell you about wearing your gloves because I'm picking on you or because I really think they will protect you?
That's all.
Tell me, Christy, why aren't you wearing your gloves?
Because they hurt my hand. They're too tight.
Wow. You see what I did? Number one, I didn't tell Christy what she needed to do. If you tell somebody what to do, guess what? Most of the time they don't believe you. You've got an agenda. My agenda is because it's my job and I want my bonus, you put your gloves on. I've got an agenda. But when an employee, when I ask her, you do understand why I'm asking you to wear your gloves, don't you? She told me. And because she told me, she is more likely to believe what she tells me than what I tell her. So now I've reinforced in her mind that I'm telling her because it's safer for her, not because I have an agenda, but she's told me it's safer for her. Guess what else I found out? I found out that her gloves are too tight. Now, if I didn't ask her, I wouldn't have known that. And I probably would have written there once, twice, three times, sent it out the door, and they never have found that out, that the gloves were too tight, because I never asked. And she just thought, well, they're supposed to be that tight. So she never told me. Most of our can't-do employees can become very simply can-do employees simply by asking the right questions. And won't-do employees, a lot of them will turn around because when they hear themselves saying, I'll be safer if I wear them, rather than telling them they'll be safer if they wear them, now they've got a new attitude. The light comes on. We have got to learn to ask questions. And the resolutionary process, and I didn't know this till 15 years ago. I mean, I was one of those, you're fired people. You know? My mentality was to write somebody up and get them out the door as quickly as I could. And I learned the hard way that didn't work for me. And if you will try this, you're going to see a change in attitude. This is a different world that we live in. I mean, 10 years ago, you told somebody what to do, and either they did or they went out the door. They knew that. That doesn't happen today with the new generation that we're working in. And so, we need to learn to start asking questions. Oh yes, this is good.
Ah. Oh, it's a
their commitment. And we get their involvement and commitment by asking them questions. When I ask Christy, now, do you think I asked you to wear your gloves because I want to pick on you? Why do you think I killed you? What did she say? She said, because it'll be safer for me. I got her involved. I asked her a question. She had to go through this process of thinking and then giving me an answer. And so I got her involved in the process, and then I got her to commit. When you ask an employee a question, and you know, I got to tell you, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I have a nephew. And I've had some employees, I ask them a question, they go, I don't know. That ever happened to you? I don't know. Don't let them off the hook. My nephew hates me. Whenever he says, well, I don't know, I then ask him, well, Matthew, if you did know, what would your response be? Don't let them off the hook. Ask them. Make them answer you. And when Christy said, because it will make me safer, now I have her got committed. I may have to work on her self-esteem that she thinks she's worthy of being safe. But by getting them involved and getting an agreement, getting them committed, here's the other part of the process. We're going to role play with me again, okay? So here I have her, and she has just told me that it'll keep her safer. I'll say, Christy, what are some things that we can do that will help you to remember to put your gloves on?
Maybe every morning somebody comes by and makes sure that there are gloves available for us so we don't have to go search for them.
Okay. So what you're saying right now is that gloves are not always available?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you think that maybe having, would you be open to doing that before doing your work, making sure that everybody has gloves at their station? What did I just do? I made her a part of the process rather than a part of the problem. I just gave her some responsibility. Now she feels pretty good about herself. Now when she sees a co-worker that's not wearing their gloves, do you think she's more apt to say something to them? The process is all about asking questions, getting them involved. Look, don't tell them what it is they need to do. Ask them. What are some other things that we might need to make sure that you get your gloves on in the morning?
Well, part of the reason I don't wear this is because they're too tight. So maybe you can have other sizes available.
Okay. Okay. So maybe if we had gloves, extra gloves as well for people that have their specific sizes in the storeroom, and then when you check the stations to make sure they have their gloves, if they don't, then you know what size to get. It's all about asking questions and getting them committed and getting them involved to be a part of the process. Now, do you think that's a lot better than my telling them, Christy, put your gloves on, I don't want to tell you this again? Because she's going to get this chip on her shoulder. And she's going to think, well, who are you to be telling me what to do? I'm an adult. You can't talk to me like that. And then follow up and accountability. Now, if I have an employee, for example, Christy, and I have a form. I use a form. And I'm going to sit down with Christy. And maybe Christy doesn't realize that not wearing her gloves is a problem. I just need to ask her more questions. Well, Christy, I understand that you don't like to wear your gloves. And it's never happened to you before. You've never gotten hurt. But let me ask you something. If something happened and you cut off a finger, how would your family feel? They would. Now, how would you feel? Okay. Now, of course, if it never happened, but would you agree that things have happened to you before that you never expected to happen? make it personal. I don't tell it to her. I'm asking questions. I'm making her give me the answers so she has to think about it. So now you can understand why not wearing your gloves can be a problem, don't you? Okay? And then I'm going to ask her for solutions, and I'm going to write them down. She's going to give me these solutions, you know, making sure gloves fit, making sure gloves, what am I going to do, what my responsibilities are going to do. I'm going to maybe put this all in a form, and then I'm going to say, now, Christy, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that a week from now, we're still on the same page with your responsibilities, what you told me you're willing to do, and what I need to do. So I'm going to sign this. I'm going to ask you to sign it. And then I'm going to make a photocopy of it. I'm going to give you a copy of it so that we both understand what our responsibilities are. Let's sit down a week from today and let's talk about how we're progressing. Okay? Now, I want you to understand that this is an agreement between you and me. You do know what you need to do, don't you? And as long as I fulfill my end of the bargain, we're going to be on the same page, right? If for some reason that you are not able to meet these requirements, then we're going to have to move on to the next level, okay? So I make sure that they are accountable with a follow-up accountability and with accountable to what it is that we've agreed on. So we need to make sure that we follow up with people and make sure that they are accountable. We can't just say, do this and let them go. We've got to make sure that they know what it is that they're supposed to be doing. The process is what we call feed forward. How many of you have heard the term feed forward? Wow. It's a new buzzword that's out there. Now, I can take part credit because I came up with the resolutionary process. I did not come up with the feed forward. I wish I had, but I didn't. But it works nicely in reference to the resolutionary process. The feed-forward process is focusing on solutions rather than mistakes, on the future rather than on the past. Will enhance the self-image of business leaders and employees alike and propel them on the road to success. So we are no longer going to use the verbiage feedback, because feedback tends to look back at what's already occurred. Instead, we're going to use feed forward, so we're looking forward. Feedback, on the other hand, there's two types. One is downward feedback. That's information that's communicated from supervisors, managers, and management to their employees. Then there's what's known as upward feedback, which is feedback from employees to management. The problem with this, however, is that feedback focuses on a past, on what has already occurred. So let's talk about feed forward and some of the benefits of feed forward. First of all, feed forward focuses on the future. You see, when Christy and I sat down, and I'm going through this process with her, I asked her, what are some things that you and I need to do to make sure that you are wearing your gloves? I focused on the future. I focused on what it is that needed to be done. I didn't focus a lot on what she wasn't doing, but on what she needed to do. Also, feed forward focuses on employee-generated solutions. If the employee will come up with the solutions, they are more likely to follow through with those solutions, as long as you're giving them accountability, but they are more likely to follow through with those solutions than if you just told them what to do. It's aimed at helping them achieve their goals. rather than punishing an employee by giving them that impression that we're disciplining them and punishing them by disciplining them. Instead, what you're telling them is, what is it that I can do to help you? What is it that we can work on together? We are partners in this process of working together for the common goal. We should have a common goal, both Christy and I, that she goes home safe at the end of the day. That's our goal. And so, that's what the aim is helping them to achieve that goal of getting home to their family. Now, this type of process cannot be taken personally. Can it? I mean, I'm just asking her questions. Now, if I ask her questions, but I'm just, how stupid are you? Okay? You gotta make sure you ask them the right questions. But I'm not treating her like a little kid. I'm asking her adult questions. What are some things that you feel you need to do to make sure that you wear your gloves? If I told her what to do, now you need to wear your gloves, I want you to put them in your pocket every time you take them off, I want you to make sure that you do this and you do that and you do this, she's going to take it personally because now she gets the perception. See, I'm not treating her like a dummy, but she gets that perception. Then I'm treating her like a dummy. With a resolutionary process, she cannot take it personally. And I'm assuming that she's going to make a positive change by asking her the question, what is it that you need to do? I'm assuming that she's going to do it. Following that up with accountability, I'm just assuming that that's what she's going to do. And I'm going to make the employee responsible for the outcome. Because remember, I asked Christy, now you do understand that, because I asked her first of all, if you, knowing what you need to do, and if I follow through on my part, there isn't any reason why you can't accomplish this. Is that correct? She agreed with me. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to make her responsible. So that if she doesn't follow through, she can't blame me, unless, of course, I didn't follow through with what I told her I wasn't going to follow through. So, responsibility, the process. First of all, and we change the language again, we are now using a verbal feed forward. And some employees, you're going to have to, especially the won't-do employee, you're going to have to follow this process. But let me tell you something. If you've done this correctly, in the back of your mind is thinking, what else can I do to help this employee? What else can I do to help them succeed? Rather than the old discipline philosophy of how many times do I have to go through this before I get rid of them? We have verbal feed forward. From there we move into a first written feed forward. And all through these, I'm asking questions. What is it that you need to do? What is it maybe that you don't understand? From there, we move through a second written to feed forward with time off. I'm going to tell you something. I never fire anybody. I don't fire people anymore. I simply free up their future so they can have the opportunity to work elsewhere. Because if you've done this right, if you've done this with the right attitude, if you've done this with the right process, if you've done everything that you can to help that employee succeed, guess what? You really didn't terminate them, did you? All you're doing is finishing up the paperwork for them because they made the decision. They knew what they needed to do. They told you what they needed to do. But they made the decision not to do it. And therefore, you left the decision in their hands of whether or not they were going to comply, whether or not they were going to change their behavior, and whether or not they were going to stay employed with the organization. Here's my contact information. I want to be a resource for you. Once again, if you left your business card out there, within the next 30 to 60 days, I'm going to send you an electronic copy of the book that I'm in the process of completing. Email me. Let me know your thoughts, your ideas. If you have things going on at work right now and you don't quite know how to deal with them, use me as a free resource. Contact me. Let me see if I can help you, give you some ideas and some suggestions. Feel free to grab one of my business cards out there on the table as well. Otherwise, that's my contact information there. It's also on the business card. What questions can I answer for you right now? See, I don't want to belittle her, okay? Christy, I can appreciate that you don't like the old brown gloves. What color gloves do you like?
Bright pink.
Bright pink. Well, that would wake everybody up. Unfortunately, the supplier does not provide bright pink gloves. However, let me ask you a question. Do you think bright pink gloves would keep you safer than the brown gloves? Do you feel that you're telling me that you would be just as safe wearing the brown gloves as you would the pink?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. I understand that. Your family, do you think they care whether or not your gloves are pink or brown as long as they keep you safe? And you really do want to get home safe at night, don't you? Let me ask you something for me. I need your help, okay? Let's try for a week. Put your gloves on for the next week, the old brown ones, and at the end of the week, let's sit down again and let's talk about how you feel about the color, maybe what types of issues you still have, and let's talk about some more, okay? You see, what I've done is I did not buy into her excuse. I simply asked her questions to make sure that she would finally come around to my way of thinking. But I never belittled her. I asked her questions, logical questions, questions that I knew she would probably have to answer the way that I wanted them to answer, but she's just trying to be dumb, tough, and difficult. And I had to make her think. Did that make sense? And I know you get some of the most stupid things. But I have learned that if you ask enough questions, eventually you pop people out of the stupid rut that they're in. And they start, you know, and every time she said yes to a question that I wanted her to say yes to, or gave me an answer that I knew I wanted her to give me, it reinforced within her what I needed her to do. That make sense? Any other questions? Look, I really want you to go back. And I want you to try this. And if you're not the supervisor or management, tell your supervisor or manager what you've heard here today and have them call me. Because my goal is to make sure that at the end of the day, everybody goes home and sings with everything it has. That's my goal. I want to make sure you fill out your evaluation for me. You can drop it off at the table out there with Fred. Fred will be glad to give it to you. If you still have questions, if you want to come up and talk to me, I'll be here. Other than that, I want to thank you very much. We have a good rest of college.